NFL? It's the Football League podcast ruling itself out of the running for Match of the Day host. Coming up, King turns to pauper in Coventry Fans Forum. We'll talk about teams who haven't done much yet, discuss which manager might be updating their LinkedIn profile soon, and plenty more besides. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And it's an international break, so we are mixing up the format a little bit this week, listener. Later, we'll hear from a Norwich City expert on the Canaries' slump in form and more. We've got plenty of other stuff to discuss, too. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, and I'm joined by Adrian Clark. Hello.
Hello, Matt. You all right?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. Sam Parkin's back with us, too. You okay, Sam?
Good, Matt. Hello, Clarky.
We're all here. We're all happy to be talking about everything Football League. Let me ask you for a favour, though. If you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, that would really help us out. It helps other people find the show. We are also delighted to say that we've partnered up with Quinbet for another season. And to celebrate that, Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. That's too difficult for you to remember. Don't worry, it is in the show notes. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and run the National Gambling Helpline. Okay, we're going to start today, as we did last week, by talking about Coventry City. Now then, was holding a fans forum a week after sacking one of the most popular managers in your club's history a good idea? Ask Coventry chairman Doug King after the fact, and he might concede that no, it was not. The BBC report that King stunned impassioned fans present by admitting he had no plan for the future and no immediate successor lined up to replace Mark Robbins. He also revealed it was Robbins' decision to let his assistant Adi Vivash leave just before the season, saying it was Mark who dismantled the coaching staff at this football club. That's the thing people don't realise. I had a phone call from him saying he could no longer work with Adi Vivash. That annoyed me. When questioned as to why he'd not already gone down the modern route of having his replacement lined up, he simply said, "That's not the way I work." Adrian, try and pick the bones out of this if you can. I mean, on that last thing, do you actually believe him, or has somebody turned him down, or has he got somebody lined up that is going to be appointed just after I hit publish on this podcast?
Well, you can never really believe anyone in football, because they won't always reveal the truth, would they? So you have to take a lot of things with a pinch of salt. I actually think it's taken some heat off of him, this fans forum, in a way, because he's come out with that bombshell. The big line really is that Robbins was the one that kind of ruined it for Coventry by falling out with Adi Vivash, which we didn't necessarily know about. So that's taken a little bit of heat off him. It is negligent of any chairman or club owner, isn't it, to not identify possible replacements for a head coach. I think you have to, especially these days where, you know, let's face it, the lifespan of a championship manager is very, very short, albeit that hasn't been the case at Coventry. But yeah, he said himself that the downturn started after the FA Cup semi-final, that it was a difficult summer and a poor start to the season. He's had a long, long time to start thinking about who might come in. So in that sense, you know, it's really poor from him if he hasn't, unless, of course, he's just keeping his cards close to his chest. It was interesting, the Frank Lampard thing. He kind of dismissed that, didn't he, in terms of, I haven't spoken to Frank Lampard. He hasn't spoken to me. So that doesn't feel imminent. The one name, I've got to say, just a little curveball here, one name on the list of possibles that might fit the brief, because he said he wants a head coach that's a brilliant coach on the training ground. Maybe Lee Carsley. He's a name on that list. He's had his crack with England. He doesn't want it. And a bit of a hash of the press, didn't he? That was a bit of a nightmare. But like with Thomas Tuchel taking the job now, he's kind of like boxed in a little bit at the under 21s. This might be his moment to get out and get himself a really good job in the sort of EFL. And he's got links to Coventry. He's been there before, of course, as an assistant. He took over as caretaker. So yeah, that he might be someone that they want to talk to. But obviously Lee Carsley is currently otherwise engaged for the next week or so. So maybe they'll buy a little bit of time there. I would, if I was in their shoes, I'd want to speak to Lee Carsley.
Yeah, the favourites, as I'm looking at it, Lampard, heavy favourite, odds on, Robbie Keane, Matt Bloomfield, and then it's Carsley. What do you make of this, Sam? I mean, you've got to give the owner credit for actually coming out and, well, A, keeping the commitment to do the fans forum, but putting his case across. But it doesn't seem to have placated many Coventry supporters, and I'm sure Mark Robbins didn't particularly appreciate the content of what he said either.
No. I would say from what I've seen, I think he's done him some credit coming out last night. I'm with Clarkey there. I've follow and I know some staunch Coventry supporters, podcasters that have softened in the last 12 hours or so. So I think now that they know all the facts and that he didn't, there's a few things that are quite confusing, I think, and people are digging into that and there's not great level of clarity on everything. But I think in the main, his honesty, I think, has been appreciated from what I've seen. So we shall see. I don't see the Lampard one, to be honest, because even though you see Lampard pulling on his F50s or whatever they were, the Adidas, to get out on the training ground and do a bit of coaching, I still think Frank Lampard's a manager, really, and he likes having his close-knit group of coaching staff. So there'll be some surgery there to get rid of the three coaches they brought in or find different positions for them if Lampard was to come in with his coaching team that has been evident, obviously, at Derby, Chelsea and latterly at Everton. So I wouldn't necessarily see that one right now. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens to Robbins here on in. I'm sure there will be interest in him, but this obviously dilutes it a little bit when, you know, it's out there now in the public domain that they've lost someone that was so integral, Adi Vivash, in the summer. And that ultimately is what has probably cost Mark Robbins the opportunity to have another go at it again this season. I don't think the ninth place finish last year, the way they tailed off, I suppose didn't kick on to make the playoffs, helped. And obviously a slow start to this season. Also on the Lampard thing, Dean Austin, I think, is the head of recruitment, who faced a few, you know, strongly worded questions last night as well. And I think if you look at the type of players they brought in, when you consider the amount of quality that's gone out the door over the last few years, I think it's five or six players that were brought in. Thomas Asante at 25, the oldest, all young players really for the future rather than the now. So, that would maybe suit Frank Lampard and his coaching team. But I just think Frank Lampard answering to a head of recruitment who's given him the players, we think, possibly having a big say anyway. Not sure that Lampard would be aligned to that, even though I think it's a pretty good job for him to get back in, given that it's not gone particularly well for him previously.
Yeah, for me, I look at the squad and I think it's easy good enough. I think going for on the ball, Coventry are good enough to get in the playoffs. No doubt about that. But I look at the personnel without the ball, the defensive unit, and I don't think the quality at the back is as good as the quality in forward areas. I just don't see it. I think they've concentrated quite heavily on bringing in players that can impact games with creativity and goals, but they haven't really got top-notch defenders, in my opinion. So that's the first port of call, I think, in January for Coventry if they want to resurrect their season.
All right, well, it is the November international break, which is traditionally the time when managers get a little nervous. It is perilous to do this on a podcast, but we are going to discuss who might be under pressure, and hopefully it won't be ludicrously out of date by the time you hear this, listener. Sam, I'm going to start with you because we're going to talk QPR. I was mocked by both of you on this podcast a couple of weeks ago for suggesting that Marty Cifuentes was under pressure. Ooh, but he's just signed a new contract, you two both said. How do you feel now? Embarrassed, presumably. Yeah,
no, slightly more concerned for him. That's it. I think he'd be the least likely of the managers we're going to discuss to depart. I still think that everyone is pointing towards a really disappointing summer transfer window. Certainly, the majority of the players are underwhelming, to say the least, and I think that's someone else doing that work. So I think him persevering with Seller for one is a little bit problematic at the moment, because the centre forward is getting worse and worse as the games go on. And he had a little flurry of chances, I think we spoke of last week against Middlesbrough, where he looked a little bit brighter. But yeah, that's a problem because the supporters are on him. The bigger thing, I suppose, is the lack of the creativity. And Dembele was brought in during the summer, who looked like one of the better signings and one of the players that kind of adhered himself to the supporters' early part of the campaign. But he is now injured. Ilias Chair, injured. The knock-on effect of that is huge, because they're not going to create any chances. You know, they're way down the bottom in all the statistical charts in terms of XG and shots and big chances. And that is obviously echoed in the results and the lack of goals. So, but I think the manager still, in my opinion, has to be given an opportunity when all the players are back. Well, a few of them are back. So for his sake, he'll be desperate for these 2 weeks to pass and him have some more players available. Because having Sam Field in the back three, for example, at the moment, well, playing as a centre-half and a back two in that game against Middlesbrough is not ideal for anyone. So until that happens, until he's got a better players at his disposal, he can't be fully judged. And you just think back to last season, and there's still his name being sung. I'd said about it last time. Yes, it wasn't the most vociferous chant ever, but I think he still had some goodwill towards him. But there was an inevitability about that defeat at Leeds, and hardly laid a glove on him.
What about Hull City?
So not embarrassed, Matt. Not embarrassed, if you didn't get that.
Good. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I believe you. Thousands wouldn't. What about Hull City, Clarkie? The owner didn't like the style of football under Liam Rossignol. He probably doesn't like the league position under Tim Valter much.
Nah. He's got to be on the edge, hasn't he, Tim Valter? I think it's, you know, he came in with the brief to produce more entertaining football, and they're not scoring that many goals. They certainly aren't keeping clean sheets. I think they got a clean sheet against Millwall very early on in the season. That's it. You know, when I've watched them, they've looked too open without the ball. You know, they're quite good and creative at times. When they've got all their players fit, they can make things happen going forward. But when they lose the ball, it's too easy to go through Hull City, in my opinion. Obviously, they've got the sort of slightly crazy high line where the central defender joins in midfield. It is vulnerable. And they're getting found out. What I will say, and this is the case for all three of the managers we're going to talk about, is that they've been plagued by bad injuries, really bad injuries. For me, the two best players that I saw going forward for Hull in the matches that I've seen them this season are Liam Miller and Mohamed Bouloumi, and both are out long term now. So that's a massive issue. Kamara's unfit, Alzate is unfit. They've lost a number of key personnel. So yeah, he's up against it. But for me, I like him as a character, you know, a bit larger than life. But they've gone backwards, in my opinion, since Rossignol left the club. They certainly haven't progressed. And we know that the owner's not one to mess around. So, yeah, does anyone out there think that he's going to guide them towards, you know, almost the playoffs this season? I don't. I don't think many Hull City fans do either. So I would imagine a change will be incoming soon.
I know it's been volatile there, but I feel that he took such a gamble, and it was almost akin to the outpouring for Liam Rossignol, certainly nationally akin to what's been going on with Robbins. Maybe not quite at that level, but I just think it would be incredibly bold for him to change again now. I think he has to afford him a little bit of time. I think the thing he'll point towards, I've not done loads of digging, but they are underperforming their XG going forward. 13 shots to 5 against West Bromwich Albion. The previous game, I just, you know, remember them being really unfortunate to lose that game at Oxford. Again, they only allowed 4 attempts on their goal and had 12 at the opposite end. So I think they are missing chances, probably creating a decent level of chances, certainly in the last few weeks. But I'm not fully confident that there's the players there to start converting, to be honest. So that would be my reluctance. If they are going to play this open, expansive style, they're going to continue to ship goals. And I don't think they've probably got the quality, especially with the injuries that you just mentioned. Zambrano as well, someone who's caught the eye, he's got this doping scandal as well. So they've been hit with two injuries to the best wingers, as you say, Clarkie, and also a midfield player who was looking pretty handy. So it'll be hoping they can obviously find that goal scoring touch, but I can't see it turning around anytime soon.
The issue is, if you've lost your best creators, and they can't do much about that until January, and you're missing too many chances, and you're open without the ball, you're in massive trouble. You've got to sort of almost shut up shop, haven't you? When you know that your better forwards aren't around, you've got to be a bit more secure. And I just don't see Valter really doing that. The style of play is not conducive to being that particularly solid, even though those numbers are very telling. I just think, Yeah, the quality of the chances they're giving up is maybe too high.
All right, one more manager. I wanted to get both your opinions on as to whether they're going to be sticking around for much longer. Sam, if I was to say to you what the Luton Town and Paula Abdul and MC Scat Cat have in common, you might see, well, they take two steps forward and two steps back. Opposites Attract, kids, came out in 1989, believe it or not. What I'm trying to get at here is that it feels like we've done a couple of shows this season where we said, well, that's a big win for Luton. Everything's going to turn around now. You were at the covering the game against Cardiff the other week. They followed that up with a 5-1 thrashing at Middlesbrough. It's not getting any better for him, really, is it?
No, it's not. And I think, if you look at the last half dozen games, there's only really been the Middlesbrough game where they were obviously very poor, and the second half at Coventry, where the performance levels have really dropped. So I think there has been a more consistent Luton in terms of their performances. The problem being, they've only taken 7 points from the available 18. So they're not rising up the table. They're not putting back-to-back wins together, and therefore the mood is not really improving. So yeah, this was a desperately sorry defeat. I didn't see it happening, despite, you know, Middlesbrough bashing up QPR in the game preceding the weekend. So it's really difficult to pinpoint. I mean, that was, you know, as open and as frank as I've heard him after the game, almost kind of opening the door really to his exit if they wanted to pull the trigger. I still deep down think that there's so many sensible people at Luton, and the way that they've run the club over the last few years, and with the infrastructure being improved, training ground, the ground on the horizon, I think they'd, in an ideal world, still love to stick with Rob Edwards and have that continuity. But again, like he had to do during the last international break, he's going to have to maybe rethink one or two things. I think he's gone into this season, in my opinion, and wanted to show a little bit more about what he's capable of as a coach. And I think early part of the season, he was looking at some different patterns, and they were trying to play a little bit more. The goalkeeper and the centre halves were doing that, where they were playing out and trying to make the spare man. And I think in the last few weeks, they've ripped that up and gone back to what's got them the success. And so that was an admission to a degree that this is the best way to get points. And I think if you throw that in with obviously the mental side of dropping out of the Premier League into the Championship, maybe for the players more so than Rob Edwards, I think there's been a hangover. Absolutely. I think it must be really difficult, especially for the players that were linked with moves back to the Premier League, but also the reality of the intensity of the Championship and getting on the coach on a Tuesday and going up and having really, really hard games against aggressive sides. It's, you know, it would have been a wake-up call for them after the lights of the Premier League and all the plaudits that came with it. So I think they're just suffering at the moment. I hope they don't change. I hope he can turn it around. But I think he's the most in danger because the way he's speaking post-match. So they must be having that type of discussion, whether he's having it with the owners. And what I will say, I think coming down, maybe if they did have a different voice from the summer, they might have more points. I think that would be a pertinent point, because I just think Rob to be there with his staff and the same group of players going into the Championship has been really problematic. I didn't want that to happen. I don't think it should have happened. But with retrospect, maybe they would be sitting slightly prettier. But again, listen, I've got a lot of time for him. I've got a lot of time for the staff, and I hope he's going to be there, and I hope they can turn it around. But it's not going to be a season where they're getting in the playoffs.
Adrian, what do you think? Yeah. Is he putting this kind of talk out there, as Sam says, to say, well, you know, if you did think we should part company, then you do it, and then you'll have to pay me off.
No doubt he'd get a great gig, wouldn't he? No doubt if he was to go now, he'd get another good job, wouldn't he?
He would get another good job. I just think he's a nice fella. I think, you know, there's a chance here he could resign. I actually think there is a chance, because I think he's that kind of guy that if he thinks he can't take them any further, he might walk away. I really hope that doesn't happen. I'm with Sam here. He's proven to be such a top-notch coach over the last few years that I think he remains a big asset to Luton. But he's definitely having a little bit of a panic up. I know that they had three games in a week, but a lot of changes for that game at Borough. Some sort of odd changes. Obviously, Carlton Morris was left out of the game. Tom Krause, who I think been playing very well. Jordan Clark, he sort of changed his entire central midfield. He played
a breakdown, Clarkey, as well. And with Adebayo and Carlton Morris finding their rhythm all of a sudden.
It was an odd team selection. He played Amari Bell as a left wing back. Obviously, there was no doubt he had to do something different. But he ripped that up at halftime, brought on Victor Moses. He brought on all of the players I've just mentioned between the 50th and the 60th minute in really a concession that he got it wrong. So managers under pressure can make panicky decisions, and I think he may or overthink things. And I think that's exactly what he did last week. He needs to just be really clear on what he wants, what his best team is, and he needs to just stick with it for 3, 4, 5 games and hope that he gets a reaction. Yeah, I think Luton's hierarchy want to give him one last shot here, and I think he deserves that.
All right, we shall see. Let's hope that nobody loses their job. I'll tell you who we haven't spoke about much this season. That's a feature we're going to do next. So what we thought was, there's obviously loads of teams in the Football League, and some of them are bound to dominate the conversation more than others. That's just the way it goes. But given we're on a pause, there's a chance for us to talk about some sides that we maybe haven't spoke much about this term. In the Championship, we're going to start, Adrian, with Blackburn Rovers, 9th in the table, 3 points outside the playoffs after they ended a 3-game losing streak with victory at Cardiff. Important to win that game, but also get a few goals because they hadn't scored in 4 before that.
Oh, it'd been over 7 hours, hadn't it? So, yeah. But look, in several of those games, Blackburn had just been denied. I mean, certainly the previous game against Stoke, Victor Johansson had a sort of 9.8 out of 10 performance. You know, it was just sort of everything but scoring a goal. So I felt like it was coming. They just needed to get one and then things would flow. And oh, goodness me, there were 3 great goals in the match at Cardiff City. Really, really uplifting performance from the team. Some great football, really good football from Blackburn Rovers, who I think are still kind of exceeding expectations. Yeah, I think he's doing a really good job, John Eustace. It's interesting that he's trying to get them playing a bit of football. He's trying to play out from the back where possible, play through the thirds. I think the central midfield was an issue last year. They just didn't settle on anyone. Like, it was chopping and changing every single week. But they've got Lewis Travis, who's having a really good season, and Tronstad alongside him. And they look to be, you know, forming a nice partnership with and without the ball. Todd Cantwell has added a little bit of stardust, I guess. He's got a bit of quality, hasn't he? You can't rely on him to deliver every week, but he's got, when he's on it, there's a bit of swagger about Cantwell, and he can give them that creativity. Just looking at some of the numbers, they've had the fewest shots, which kind of surprised me in the division. 4th lowest XG, fewest efforts from set pieces. So there's work to do in the final third, but that might come down to personnel, because they wanted Maktar Gay to be the guy, didn't they? Big, massive unit who really is a handful for them, but he's not scoring. So they've had to drop him and use Ahashi on his own up front, who is hardworking, talented, but maybe not, doesn't give them the platform that they need. A couple of other standout stats, 6 goals from subs this season. That's the most in the Championship. And yeah, just lots and lots of crosses, particularly from Ryan Hedges. So look, I think where they are now is about where Blackburn Rovers can achieve this season. I can't see them getting into the playoffs. But if they can get into the top half, that will be, you know, a step in the right direction, I think, for John Eustace and Blackburn Rovers. Still got a very young side, of course. So, yeah, I think they're doing all right, considering they've just come off a run where they hadn't scored for weeks and weeks and weeks.
One thing that might worry them, I was looking at our friend Daniel Story's piece that he did on Blackburn the other week, and he mentioned something about how sparse it felt at Ewood. So I had a look, and according to Transfermarkt, the average attendance is down by 4,000 a match this season on last season.
They put the prices up, I wonder, because that's quite some drop, isn't it?
It's a massive drop, yeah. 14 years into Venky's now, they've got to try and make their money back somewhere, I suppose.
Yeah, the other thing I should have mentioned is they're fantastic on the break. 13 fast break shots, 3 goals. That's right up there among the highest in the Championship. So, yeah, there's a lot to like, I think, about Blackburn Rovers. But quality-wise, they don't have a squad that is the equal of a lot of the teams at the higher end.
Bristol City are behind Blackburn on goal difference. The Robins have flown under our radar, Sam, despite losing only one of their last 10. Anis Mehmeti thinks they've got the depth of squad to compete this season. Do you agree with him?
Probably not. Probably not. Yeah, I mean, they frustrate the life out of me, Bristol City. And I think it's because they go away from home and win so frequently in the fashion that they did at the weekend and at Ashton Gate. They just can't get that consistency, it would seem. Just the two wins there so far this season. If you remember, it was a late controversial penalty, I think, against Oxford. And obviously that brilliant game early doors against Millwall, which was just crazy. Scott Twine getting a late winner. On the road, they certainly seem to be playing slightly differently at the moment. Having spoken to an ardent Bristol City fan yesterday, I looked at some of the numbers and absolutely they were quite back to front against Norwich at the weekend. Only 34% of the ball. I think the blueprint is to try and get high pressure and get a lot of bodies around the ball. They're playing with a midfield box. Knight and Bird have been getting a lot of plaudits. McGwain, who I think was Arsenal, wasn't he?
He was,
Barcelona,
yeah.
maybe?
Well, Barcelona B.
Barcelona B.
Yeah, not
Yeah,
quite the
but
same.
like really classy player who Manning, I think, had at Oxford previously. So he knows him and he's playing with like a bit of swagger at the moment. Mometi up to four goals for the season. He is showing that consistency. Mometi, I think he's really frustrates supporters or has frustrated the supporters at Ashton Gate thus far. But he's a real threat in terms of like some of those numbers. Yeah, just from the weekend, 60 of 341 passes went long and Norwich 41 of their 602. So I think I've not worked out the percentages, but I think they are playing a little bit faster, getting the ball forward. So yeah, and they've got the second most high turnovers to Leeds United in the division. So I think, you know, when he was appointed, they spoke about this style of play that they wanted to go for, to be youthful and be, you know, high pressing. And I think we're seeing that, but I think we've also seen probably a little switch. I don't know if it was just for this Norwich game in particular, but I think some games are identifying where they're being a little bit more back to front. And yeah, obviously away from home, really good. Five unbeaten on the road now at Ashton Gate. Need to try and find a little bit of rhythm. The reason I was hesitant when you asked me, Matt, I'd probably question as to whether they have got enough goal threat. Mayulu, Naki Wells, who's doing brilliantly at the moment. Mometi, that's probably their three. Armstrong from QPR. I'm not sure, to catapult yourself into playoff contenders, whether they've probably got enough going forward. That's my gut, but I'm probably going on the sense that they've let me down for the last decade as well.
Let you down, let you personally down, haven't they, Sam?
I want a Bristol club in the Premier League.
Yeah,
Yeah, I'm on that boat.
Okay. I think pound for pound, Liam Manning is one of the best coaches in the Championship. I just do. I think whenever I see them, I think they're a proper well-coached team. Sam's touching it. They can play in different ways. You know, they've even gone to a back three in recent matches. They can counter. They can go long. They can press very well. I think they're a really well-coached team. They just don't have the squad, in my view. They've got kind of a few wild cards, haven't they, in the squad? Sam just mentioned it. Mayulu, 22 years of age. Sinclair Armstrong, 21. They signed Hirakawa. He's 23. They just need two of those to maybe catch fire and to start to make a real name for themselves. And maybe they can score the goals that they need. But yeah, I'm with Sam. I just don't know if they've got they could they, I don't know if they've got enough reliable firepower to win the games they'll need to get into the playoffs.
Well, Norwich City find themselves down in 14th position. They saw their long unbeaten run at Carrow Road ended by Bristol City this past weekend. Chris Gorham commentates on the Canaries for BBC Norfolk and joins us now. Chris, Johannes Softhorpe said this international break's come at the best time for Norwich because of their injury situation and I think just the need for a kind of general refresh after three defeats on the spin. Is he right?
He's bang on. Yeah, he absolutely is. I think if you'd had me on at the start of the last international break, then there was a feeling of frustration that Norwich were having to stop for a couple of weeks because they were in really good form. I think Sam, I've heard him on the podcast before talking about Norwich's brilliant 4-0 win over Hull just before the last international break, where they really looked like they were a good side. We were starting to call it Lifthoff under the new manager. That's the best we could come up with. But yes, it's not gone well since. The pattern since then has been a series of injuries, really. Since that Hull win, they've lost the goalkeeper, Angus Gunn. I think he actually went off injured during that game. They've then lost all three of the midfielders who started that game. Nunez, McLean is suspended and has now been given an extra game, so he won't be back for the next game. And Anis Ben Slimani, who'd made a pretty promising start since arriving from Sheffield United. They'd linked up really well as a unit in midfield. They've all been missing from recent games. And to make matters even worse, they've now lost Josh Sargent. He's not played in the last three, and he is a terrific Championship striker. He got 16 goals last season, and that was despite missing 4 months of the season through injury. So yes, there is a bit of frustration now that they've not built on what was a promising start to the season, but there's no panic. There's a lot of understanding amongst fans that had they managed to keep even a couple of those players fit, that they probably would be in a much better position than they are.
So he's got some credit in the bank then. It felt like David Wagner sort of struggled to ever really win over the Norwich supporters. Does it feel a bit different this time around? Presumably they're keen for this to be a longer term arrangement.
Yeah, it does. It was such a curious season last year, because if we go back exactly a year, the equivalent international break last year, Norwich was 17th. They just lost at home to Blackburn Rovers. And what we didn't realise then was that was going to be their last home defeat for more than a year, that the mood was pretty gloomy. By then, a lot of Norwich fans had made their mind up about David Wagner. He was seen as somebody who was brought in by the sporting director at the time, Stuart Webber. He was his man, and fans were ready for a change. Actually, despite all of the opposition to his style of play, he turned things round, and he did get players back from injury last season after Norwich had a similar injury crisis, and they went from 17th to nick a playoff place. I think there was if Norwich fans were honest with themselves, there was almost a bit of relief that they didn't win through the playoffs, because they clearly weren't ready for the Premier League. They didn't have a squad that was any near, and we've been bruised by this before. We know what it's like when you go up with a squad that's not ready. So I think, yeah, of course you always want to go up and get up at the earliest possible opportunity, but there was realism that it was time for a change, and that's why there is an air of calm among the fans at the moment that you might not expect with Norwich being 14th in the table, because fans always ask for a change of manager. Well, Norwich have had that over the last few months. They asked for a change of sporting director. They've had that. Ben Napper, who came in from Arsenal, who I know Clarke is familiar with, he replaced Stuart Webber less than a year ago, so he's still relatively new, only really had the transfer window in the summer to really make his mark and appoint his man. And even then at boardroom level, Delia Smith and Michael Wynne-Jones have just stepped down from the board, so there's new ownership in place in the American Mark Attanasio and his group. So once you've changed the manager or the head coach, the sporting director and the board all at the same time, it's not really a lot else that fans can ask for, is there?
Chris, I want to ask you about the striking options, or the lack of. Obviously no Sargent, no Barnes. Makonde's played up there. Eder's off at Celtic now. How have they been left in this predicament, I suppose? And is there anyone coming through the ranks? I know that it's been a very productive academy over decades that can fill that void.
I think the first thing to say is if Norwich had a youth team player they thought was ready, then that player would be in the team now, because this is their first season without parachute payments. So part of the job that Johannes Hoftorp has been given is to reduce the average age of the squad and to give young players a chance. I think this is an area that probably will be looked at, certainly by supporters, because they lost Josh Sargent for 4 months last season and the results nosedive just like they are now. If you go back to August, when the transfer window was open, Sargent was fit. They had Ashley Barnes, they thought, about to come back, and they had Ante Sinac, who's a Croatian under-21 international. They spent quite a lot of money on over the summer. They sold Adam Eder to Celtic and reinvested that money in Ante Sinac. But Sinac, he's only 20. He's getting used to a new culture and a new division, and they've played him mainly out on the right-hand side. He's got one goal so far, and he's not hit the heights yet that perhaps he might do, but it's asking a lot for him to go in and fill the void left by Josh Sargent. I think the bigger issue has been that they thought, back in August, they thought Ashley Barnes would be fit again by now. He's had a couple of setbacks and he's not. So yes, I think trying Marcondes up there as a false nine at the weekend, it didn't really work. They were toothless. They struggled to create chances, even with Borja Sainz in the team, who's kept them going and has been, you know, far and away the Championship's top goal scorer this season, that they couldn't even work out a goal scoring opportunity for him. And he's missed Sargent as well. I think Josh Sargent, at the point he got injured, nobody had more assists in the Championship than him this season. So you take Josh Sargent out of Norwich City, but probably his equivalent out of any team in the Championship, and they would struggle.
Yeah, yeah. Injuries have played a massive part, haven't they, in recent results? No doubt about that. We know all about Borja Sainz and his ability to just curl shot after shot into the top corner. And we love a scouting report, obviously, on this podcast. Can you give us one on a Norwich player that we might know a little bit less about? Someone that's kind of quietly gone a bit about their business really well this season?
Yeah, there's a couple of players I think have caught the imagination of Norwich fans so far. One is Callum Doyle, but given that he's already at Manchester City and he's on loan, I don't think that really counts as a bit of an undiscovered gem, does it? Norwich wanted him in much earlier in the summer, but Pep wanted to take him on Man City's pre-season tour. So he was playing with the first team was there over the summer. I would look at somebody who has looked really good in some games at the back for Norwich City, but still finding his feet a little bit. But he was the first player they signed in the summer, and it's a defender from Panama they've got called Jose Cordoba, who since he's been fit, and they left him out of the team in the first month or so of the season. But with him in the team, Johannes Hofstorp has said openly, they're able to defend a lot higher up the pitch because he's got the pace. And even when he makes a mistake on the odd occasion, he's got the pace to get back and get them out of it as well. So he's looked good. And the other one would be Kellen Fisher, who's a right backer they got from Bromley just over a year ago. And the idea was he was going to be part of the under-21 side, but he immediately caught David Wagner's attention, and Wagner gave him a bit of a go in the first team last year. Over the last month or so, last couple of months now, he's replaced Jack Stacey, who's much more experienced at right back. And if you'd asked Norwich fans in the summer, he was one of Norwich's most consistent players last season. But Kellen Fisher, who's still only 20, only in his second full season of real full-time league football, has come in and made that place his own. He's probably been one of the standout performers so far.
Finally then, Chris, strange question in a way to ask after a six-game winless streak, but they're 7 points off the playoffs. You said that last season wasn't the time for them to go up. Is this another season of kind of, well, not another season, but is this a season of mid-table stability rather than a promotion push, do you think?
That's what it feels like, and that's what it felt like in the summer. And a lot of Norwich fans were saying, look, we're not bothered about top six here. We just want a team that has an identity, that we enjoy going to watch again, that we can buy into the sporting director, the head coach, and we can really get behind them. And we want to see that this is a team that is leading somewhere. And I think you have to remember when they had Daniel Farke, that wasn't an overnight success. He won two promotions with Norwich City, but in his first season in charge, they finished where they are now. They finished 14th in the Championship, and that was a team that had James Maddison in it. So I think there is an acceptance that these things don't, if you want great change at a football club, you're not going to get overnight success. So I think, yes, most fans at the start of the season would have been happy with a mid-table finish. There were just a few hopes being raised by the way they started, and Sam saw it against Hull. They put four past Watford, four past Hull. I think until recently, they were still the top scorers in the division until perhaps the last round of matches. So it's not without hope that they could mount perhaps a late surge and get in the top six as they did last year. But that's only going to be possible if they get, you know, the majority of these players back and keep them fit for what is still, you know, a lot of games to come.
We shall see. West Brom away next up. Chris, really appreciate your time. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
And many thanks to Chris for joining us for the show today. We are going to go into League One next. Couple of teams that we've picked out that we haven't been picking out so far. Sam saw Barnsley and Rotherham in the flesh on Friday night, so they're the two sides we're going to focus on. Adrian will tell us about Rotherham shortly, but in terms of Barnsley, Sam, up to fourth. My big question with Barnsley is, are they going to get a manager who sticks around for a bit? Because I had a look at this, and since 2020, if you include caretakers, Darrell Clarke is the ninth manager that they've had. Obviously, different reasons as to why the previous incumbents have left. But surely you're not going to be able to be consistent enough to be up there challenging for promotion. I know they lost a playoff final, but you need somebody there for a little while, don't you? I know modern managers don't last forever, but...
Yeah, and I think my commentator on Friday showed me a stat that it's the ninth different nationality as well. So scouring the globe to find the man to take them into the second tier. I was really impressed with Barnsley on Friday. I think, you know, listening to anyone who's ever played for Darrell Clarke, I think he's a really good man manager. I think all the players really enjoy playing for him. And I don't think he's too proud to do what it takes to win games of football. And if that means going long to a big man, to flooding the box and putting copious amounts of balls in from wide, clearing your lines, whatever it may be, I think, you know, Darrell Clarke will do that. But what I saw was a team with different attributes nice midfield players, nice variation in their play when it was on to pass it, especially through Connell in midfield. John Russell, who we've spoken of often on this podcast during that period when he was in Corbrand's midfield that took Huddersfield to the playoff final. Those two and Adam Phillips, that's a great midfield. Phillips gets in the box, gets shots off. Russell was, for the main part, playing as kind of an eight as well. So him and Phillips are bombing on, Connell sitting. Then you have this lovely kind of balance in Keeler Dunn, who drops into pockets and goes wherever he pleases, part of the front two, if you like, although Phillips joins them quite often. And then you got Watters, whose remit is to stretch the game and play on the shoulder. So there's a nice balance there, and you don't lose the want to put balls in through O'Keefe and Genty. Georgie Genty, who's a young lad on the left-hand side, who's, I think he was at Motherwell last season on loan, but has come in and been given an opportunity this year and looks like an excellent player getting up and down the left-hand side. So they were far and away the better side. Two-goal margin, probably about right, because it was a bit of a scrappy game in terms of the derby, a lot of tackles, but by far and away the more cohesive of teams. You know, something I say often, when you probably said that about QPR Middlesbrough last week, you could understand what patterns they were trying to execute. You could see the players that were confident and in form, and in complete contrast to Rotherham, who Clarkie will come on to. So the only kind of full guy in the starting lineup was Stephen Humphreys, who has been playing really well recently. And obviously gets on and scores an absolute sumptuous second goal to cement the 3 points. So they got good options in the forward positions, and absolutely on that evidence, yeah, good bet for the playoffs minimum.
Yeah.
Not like Rotherham then, Adrian, who are on the wrong end of that result on Friday. Probably think they're in the wrong half of the table too. Lovely old chance for you to stick the boot into your old pal Stevens.
Yeah, tap in. Yeah, thanks very much. No, something doesn't feel right there, I've got to say. Obviously, rebuilt the team. So some of the players are existing players, but a whole bunch came in the summer. You do wonder if all is well behind the scenes. They certainly don't look like a team that are a team. Sam just spoke about cohesion. They've really struggled to find that. And if you look at the way that they're starting matches this season, you could also say, is Evans having his usual impact in terms of motivating players? Because they're the worst starters around. Awful. They've scored the first goal in 3 matches this season out of 15. They've conceded first in 11 of 15 matches. In the opening half hour of games, they're 7-2 down. Haven't scored a single goal in the opening 15 minutes. It's all been a bit tame. And you expect Steve Evans' teams to come out of the blocks, put you under pressure, and to really unsettle you. And they're not really doing that brilliantly, I've got to say. They've also been unlucky or wasteful. It depends which way you want to look at it. In terms of obviously, they've still had the most shots in the division. They've still got the worst conversion rate. Just to give you an idea, Rotherham averaged 14 shots a game and have scored 14 goals. The 8 other teams have averaged 12 or more shots. So the ones there or thereabouts them. Those 8 teams are averaging 23.7 goals each. Rotherham 14. So, you know, they've been really, really wasteful. The other thing is the cup game the other day against Cheltenham. It didn't attract a very big crowd. So those that did turn up hated what they saw. There was some real sort of anger aimed at the players and the manager a little bit. And that carried over to Barnsley, I think, where they gave him pelters at the end. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying they're going to change it, but it's not working in the way that they anticipated for Rotherham. They just don't look like a team yet. And I think Steve Evans, as a coach, the one thing he's done over the years is build teams. They have camaraderie, spirit, and they run through brick walls for him. And we're yet to see that really with this team of his.
Yeah, I was on Paul Rayner and Tony Stewart watch because they were right behind me. In the stand on Friday. Rayner was banned for, I think, a game, and Tony Stewart was right behind me, and Paul Rayner was on the blower for the majority of the game, obviously to another member of staff. But, you know, Tony Stewart wasn't happy and left early as well. So I think they've got such a long-standing relationship that it would still be a surprise. And given Steve Evans' track record, if they were to obviously change managers now. But as Clarkie says, the punters are not there. And I've got a few I've got a question for Clarkie, but my other chain of thought is maybe just, you know, they've brought in so many players in the summer, and obviously relatively appealing club to go to, aspirations are getting promoted for players at that level. Okay, but you've got to want to play for Steve Evans and the way that he motivates the players and stuff like that. So maybe it might take a few windows to see the ones that are on board that want to play this style and, you know, can put up with obviously the pressures of the demands that they put on you. And clearly Steve Evans and Paul Rayner put, you know, demands on the players, and it's quite old school, I would suggest. So
not a chance I'm signing for them, by the way. No, never, never, ever, you know, but and there'll be a lot of players that think like that, but there are certain players just can't get enough of it, can they? Just go from everywhere.
And bear with me with this one, but I've watched them twice in the flesh now, and I can count on one hand, I think, Clarkie, you were there at Charlton. Yeah. I can count on one hand how many chances they've had in the two games that I've been at, okay? Joe Powell puts in the most balls in the division. He's created the most chances, blah, 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 blah. Okay. I'm not seeing them create an abundance of good chances or a plethora of chances. Do you think those numbers are blurred in this example because of the amount of balls they put in the box?
Yes, definitely. They don't have that. They haven't shown great cohesion and creativity, have they? They've got good individuals. I mean, Harris.
But do you know what I mean in terms of this? Those
yeah,
statistics.
Yeah, but the stats. I'll chuck this at you. 92 of their shots have been from set pieces. So in open play, you're thinking in open play, what are they doing?
And I'm thinking I'm not seeing great chances missed.
From set pieces, yeah.
Well, probably, I don't know, I'd have to sit through them, but I'm just thinking, I've watched them a few times and I thought they are severely lacking in creativity, but the numbers would completely conflict that.
Yeah, they're obviously half chances, aren't they? 92 set piece efforts, right? Next closest is Stevenage on 64. Really good at getting that first contact, but not so good at converting. So yeah, they lack a bit of guile. It's percentage football, isn't it? A lot of it with Rotherham, and yeah, not well. The percentages aren't working for them.
No, and they're missing Wilkes and Johnson Clark Harris as well. So that would affect any side probably in that division and above. So we'll see if they can have an impact when they get back.
The League Two team that we wanted to talk about are actually top of the table, Port Vale, and yet we've barely mentioned them. So we should remedy that now. How good of a job is Darren Moore doing, Sam? And with the greatest of respect, is he maybe showing that League One, League Two is where he can excel rather than being a champ man?
I thought you were going to say there, with greatest respect, is he proving you wrong, Sam Parkin? Because you've been, you know, a doubter.
I think either of you have been.
Oh no, I've been with Sam. I'm guilty of this as well.
They've had a brilliant start to the season. When you think that, I think they lost back to back games and were thumped, weren't they? They lost 4-0 at Barrow, and I think they conceded 4 in another game. Other than that, they've been immaculate until this weekend, where by all accounts it was disgusting, that game at Gillingham. I think there was 7 or 8 attempts between both sides, and I've read some blogs and what have you from sets of supporters from both clubs, and it sounded like a horrible game. I think Port Vale have put together a really competitive squad. Mm-hmm. I think you can see, I think there's been 12 different goal scorers, or they've certainly spread the goals around. Mm-hmm. I think Stockley's leading the way with maybe 4. So that shows that they're not, you know, overly reliant on one player. I think they're missing the midfield duo at the moment. I think Byers was the one that me and Clark earmarked for potentially being the best player in that division, certainly in that department. And him and Garrity, I think that's a big miss. Garrity over a long period of time now, maybe 2 seasons, maybe 3, has been a regular source of goals for them from midfield, someone that you can actually play higher up the pitch. So listen, I don't think he's going to be too obsessed with keeping the ball and possession football, but I don't think that's the way ultimately the majority of the time to get out of the basement division. I think there's obviously examples of teams that have maybe done it, playing a little bit more football, but I think the reality is you have to have probably a little bit more brawn. And I think Darren Moore is probably doing what he's done before when he's had successful teams and setting them up. And structurally, I'm sure they'll be relatively difficult to break down. And going forward, yeah, they've got enough players to be competitive. So, yeah, it's been a brilliant run. But at the weekend, obviously, done by the odd goal winner in a stinker.
Loads of brawnage at Port Vale, no doubt about that. Jayden Stockley obviously is a big, big lad. He wins so many sort of those headers, and they pick up the pieces and whatnot. He, by the way, he's also missed seven big chances, so they've left a few goals out there as well this season. One thing I picked up on with them is their game management. When Port Vale score first, they win. Simple as. Well, except for one game. It's happened 10 times. They've gone one up, 1-9, drawn one. Barely conceded a goal after taking the lead. So they've been really, really stingy and professional, and they've seen out games very, very well. Again, like Rotherham, they focus a lot on set pieces, but unlike Rotherham, they've been scoring loads from them. So that is a big difference. Shout out to Tom Sang as well. He's played in a number of different positions for them this season. The former Cardiff player played right back, right centre back, right wing back, centre midfield. He's whipped in 48 crosses. That is like way, way more than anyone else in that team. Good deliveries from him. So yeah, Port Vale, deserving leaders, but... Yeah, I don't know if they'll stay there. I think it's wide open this season, League Two.
Well, they'll fancy their chances of getting back to winning ways this weekend. They go to the bottom side. Morecambe. Now, that is not a game that we are going to predict, but that is the point of the show where we are. Last week, Adrian and Sam both got a point. I didn't get any. Adrian, your point came... probably in the most respectable of circumstances, because you said that Coventry would get a point at Sunderland.
Of course, yeah, do I get a bonus for that? Because that was a bit out there, wasn't it? You should probably get a bonus point, shouldn't you?
No, you'll just have to make do with the kudos, I'm afraid. Sam, your point came from predicting that it would be all square between Doncaster and Notts in League Two. So you maintain your distance at the summit. I'm annoyed, actually, because I was actually going to have a look into the games that we're going to predict this week and actually try and make an informed prediction rather than just pulling something out of the top of my head like I normally do. But I totally forgot. So that is what I will be doing this time around. We're going to start with Exeter against Lincoln. You can have first crack at this, Adrian.
Oh, thanks. Exeter, Lincoln. Yeah. Exeter in quite a good form at the moment. I think they've won four of the last six. Lincoln really good on the road. Don't lose many. 1-1. Exeter 1, Lincoln 1.
Legit, that is what I was going to say, so that's annoying. I'll say 2-2 instead. What about you, Sam?
I will have Lincoln to win at St James's Park, 2-1.
Nice. Okay, you can go first, Sam, on the next one. Bristol Rovers against Crawley.
Thanks. You let Clarkie go first and you had a dig at the point that I accrued in last week's round of results. I mean, just because I've got a lovely cushion at the top. I mean, it's
28.
Just trying to unsettle you. Yeah, just trying.
You're
to
on 28. I'm on 20. Matt's on 12. So
Bristol Rovers were unconvincing. Crawley not conceding. They've started to not concede many, haven't they? But I would probably have to go for a home win here. I'll go 1-0 Rovers.
Adrian?
Yeah, Crawley are rubbish on the road, aren't they? Lost 5 of 7. I think this might be the day Bristol Rovers, they start to go through the gears, maybe. 3-1.
0-0 for me. I'm going to go first on Colchester versus Bradford. Am I going to go with draws in all three games? Yeah, I am. And I'm going to say this is going to be a ridiculously high scoring one. This is going to be 3-3. Adrian, follow that.
Wow. I mean, that's a loose cannon type prediction, that. Don't see loads of goals. It's Colchester. They're not involved in that many, are they? Can't trust Bradford, you know, on the road. I think they've lost 4 away from home already this season. Cole U obviously haven't been winning games. Maybe this is the game. Bradford, big fish comes to town. They'd love to turn them over. And they will turn them over. It's going to finish Colchester United 2, Bradford 0.
Wow, okay. Sam, what do you think?
Stinks of 1-1. Stick me down.
All right, done. We'll follow that up next week. Before we go, a couple of things to remind you of. Our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotion/sports-up-2-50. It's 18+. And remember, folks, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and run the National Gambling Helpline. You can follow us on X at EFL, what the other platforms, what the EFL is, what you search for. A tweet of the week to end things on. This one's pretty special. It comes from Peterborough United, who thrashed Cambridge in their big derby fixture at the weekend. And how else would one celebrate such a victory other than with a Nando's? The tweet from the official account simply reads, "Derby Day feast, thanks to at Nando's UK." Emoji of a figure licking its lips. Hashtag PUFC. Now, it's definitely James Dornley who is tucking into a wrap by the looks of it. I think the other player photographed digging into a bag is Harley Mills. That was the best that I could decipher. It's not a great picture side on. But, I mean, this is manna from heaven for you, isn't it, Sam? Because Nando's and footballers are natural bedfellows, as they are for football commentators as well. I'm amazed that this has taken so long for this to go public with one club.
Yeah, I've got a lot to give to this. I had a Nando's on Friday, pre Barnsley Rotherham as well. So there you go. I've had a
What's
Nando's.
Your order? My
old school order is exactly what, but now with my high cholesterol, you know, I have to, you know, tail it back a little bit. But my old school order, I did go for on this occasion, pita and halloumi, chicken and halloumi pita, with spicy rice and some kind of coleslaw.
Wow.
That's my old school order, that is. What was I going to say? I have had a Nando's delivered to London Road when I was doing a show there. So it is a fine Nando's. I like the text. I like Derby Day Feast. Very good. Very good. No problem with that. Yeah. I would probably, if I'm getting a little bit detailed here, I'd probably like to know each player's order. And if whether they did indeed order pre-match. That used to be quite good fun on the coach on the way to away games. Right, who wants sausage? Who wants fish? Tremendous. Just before like a six-pointer to get in the playoffs.
This is true.
The kit man asking who wants mushy peas. Tremendous. So I would quite like to know the orders of the lads. Maybe next time.
Yeah.
Mark, if I was being overly critical, I'd say that Peterborough missed a chance here to say Cambridge chickened out, we're chickening in. Words to that.
Well,
effect.
I don't know about the chickening in, but they did chicken out, didn't they? Yeah, Nando's is becoming a regular commentator's dish, obviously with Deliveroo and whatnot. It's so easy now, isn't it? And
what's
for me, because of the messy nature, I have different orders if I'm going in the restaurant to when I would have a takeaway. In the restaurant, I'd have, you know, one of the chicken things, you know, you need a knife and fork, but... Yeah, no, it's a wrap for me. It's just standard medium wrap. Wouldn't ever go spicy fries because it's too much peri-peri for me. But yeah, that's it really. But I always enjoy it. Should they have put hashtag ad on here on this? Or do you think it's just a generous sort of free of charge plug?
I think it might be, yeah. I like the authenticity of it not having the ad thing on. If it was Manchester City's Twitter account, I'd be annoyed that they hadn't an hashtag ad. But I think if you're in League One, you can get away with it. 183 likes. If you're wondering, listener, always the same for me. My order is always the same. Half chicken, hot, regular fries. As Clarkie says, you don't need the beri-beri fries. And coleslaw, bottomless soft drink as well, which is never bottomless, is it? You have one, maybe one and a half max, but you simply can't drink that much fizzy liquid. So it's a good scam that they've got going.
Good breakdown, I think, of that particular restaurant. I've learned that coleslaw is obviously the second side of choice. I don't think I've ever had the coleslaw. So
you've got to have the coleslaw. Okay. I had hummus as well, just if we want to continue this a little bit longer with a little drizzle. So went big.
All right. Well, look, we are seasoned Nando's eaters just as much as they are seasoned chicken providers. We will be back with another podcast next week. Enjoy the football until then. Enjoy a Nando's or any other franchised outlet which has surely popped up in your hometown by now. We'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.